The city of Miletus was an economic as well as a cultural powerhouse. So prized was Miletus by the Persians, both as trading entrepot and naval base, that she enjoyed, in comparison to the other Ionian cities, a uniquely privileged form of vassalage, one that enabled her to pretend almost to the rank of ally. On his return from Scythia, the great King Darius had duly rewarded Histias, the tyrant of Miletus, for his stalwart support of the Persian expedition by summoning him to Sardis and inquiring graciously of his Milesian Bandaka if there were any gift that he had his eye on. Since the army that Darius had left behind in Europe was at that very moment advancing westwards into Thrace, Histias, greatly daring, had wondered if he might perhaps be gifted a portion of this splendid new satrapy. The request had been granted. Histias had found himself the delighted owner of Myrcinus, complete with silver mines and forests, excellent raw material for a fleet. But already, even as he hurried to Thrace, the Persian military had very respectfully suggested to Darius that Greeks, especially subtle and ambitious Greeks such as Histias, were simply not to be trusted with too much power. Darius had announced that Histias was to be graced with yet further marks of high esteem, the magnificent title of Royal Table Companion, and an official post as the king's advisor on Greek affairs. And naturally, since Darius would shortly be leaving Sardis, Histias would now have the supreme honour of accompanying his master on his travels back to Susa. Even languishing in the gilded cage of the royal court, however, Histias did not abandon all his hopes of exploiting Persian dominance to establish an Aegean power base for his dynasty. Back in Miletus, Histias' stand-in as tyrant, his nephew Aristagoras, was soon proving himself a chip off the old block. In 500 BC, he approached Artaphernes with a scheme. "Why not," Aristagoras suggested to the satrap, "send an expedition against the island of Naxos?" It was a rare prize, and ripe for the plucking. The aristocracy were positively begging for Persian intervention. Sardis could provide the ships. Aristagoras would provide the contacts. But everything that could go wrong with the expedition did go wrong. The attempted conquest proved a debacle, and the satrap resolved that Aristagoras would have to be replaced. But Aristagoras, with nothing now left to lose, responded with a startling, not to say acrobatic, volte-face. Abdicating his tyranny before it could be taken from him, he suddenly pronounced himself a keen enthusiast for democracy. So keen, he added loudly, that he would like to see it established in all the Ionian states. This, of course, was to toss a flame into a kindling box. The revolution in Athens had been followed enthusiastically in Miletus. Calls for the establishment of a similar democracy were growing increasingly violent in the city streets. Revolution duly flared throughout Ionia, tyrannies were toppled everywhere, and democracies proclaimed in their place. Those tyrants who managed to avoid being stoned to death all fled to Artaphernes, whose fury was naturally terrible. The Ionians had effectively chosen to declare war on Darius, the King of Kings. In the first giddy flush of their liberty, this seemed barely to concern most of them. Aristagoras, however, knew better. A superpower such as Persia was not lightly challenged. If the rebellious cities were not to be crushed utterly, they would need, at the barest minimum, not merely a united front, but an effective fleet, and allies too. But how to secure them?